Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Here are some of the top stories we are covering on this Tuesday, March 4th, 2025. Several people killed in fresh clashes in South Sudan's Nasir town.
The number of people killed on the side of the White Army is large. We have not counted all the bodies yet, but as of now, 21 deaths have been confirmed. On the side of SSPDF, I do not know.
The Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition in Western Equatorial State denies allegations that opposition-appointed ministers have abandoned their duties.
The town was not under control. It was not under any security. That is why we managed to take cover, and now we are within the country, and we are now still a government of Western Equatorial State.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Several people may have been killed in Nasir town after the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the civilian militia were involved in new fighting on Tuesday. There are reports that the White Army militia have taken over the army's Welch Yard Dewi Barrack in Nasir, and some soldiers are trapped in military tanks at the barracks. Mama Abraham Kwet reports for VOA from Juba.
Fresh fighting between the White Army militia and the South Sudan People's Defense Forces in Nasir town in Upper Nile State is feared to have caused scores of casualties. Paul Rod, former Nasir County Health Director, says the number of casualties from fighting Monday and Tuesday morning remain unclear.
Yesterday we have a fighting, and this morning also there is a fighting at 6:45. And I hear that the fighting was stopped. Yesterday I confirmed that the injured people are 76, and also the deaths, I don't account them. That.
Jacob Nial, SPLAIO coordinator in Upper Nile region, says he received a report of more than 22 deaths from the White Army after yesterday's fighting. He says a letter written to the White Army convinced some youth to return to villages, but the militia's youth leader mobilized fighters in Nasir town and attacked SSPDF.
Some people with the German youth remain in the town because they were living in town. So at night, he said, anyone who can follow me, he didn't follow me, and he went to attack. They went up to inside the front military barrack where the SSPDF were. Many people would not realize, even himself, the chairman was killed inside the front. They lost more than 22 people.
Nial says the SPLAIO did not fight alongside the White Army. Several attempts to reach the spokesperson of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces were futile. There have been protracted hostilities between SSPDF and the White Army in Nasir since last year. The White Army has been calling for deployment of the National Unified Forces to Nasir to replace the SSPDF forces. About 2 weeks ago, some soldiers arrived by barges to replace SSPDF soldiers in Nasir, but the SPLAIO and the White Army called for the vessels to return, alleging the soldiers were not unified forces, but Agwelek and Abuchok forces. President Salva Kiir Mayardit held a high-level meeting yesterday to address the escalating situation in Nasir and Ulan counties of Upper Nile State. Those at the meeting resolved that army badges should travel freely to Nasir, but it is not clear that has yet happened. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwad, reporting from Juba.
The fighting in Nasir County in Upper Nile State has pushed civilians to flee their homes and their fears it could worsen. A youth leader of the militia known as the White Army in Nasir County says 21 people have been killed and many others injured in clashes between local youth and the South Sudan People's Defense Forces in Upper Nile State. For VOA News, Deng Guy Deng reports from Juba.
Ter Chol Gatkoth, a youth leader of the armed militia known as the White Army in Nasir County, says the clashes with the South Sudan People's Defense Force began Monday, and many have been injured or killed under a heavy bombardment.
The number of people killed on the side of the White Army is large. We have not counted all the bodies yet, but as of now, 21 deaths have been confirmed. On the side of SSPDF, I do not know. My youth are in control of the town, and the soldiers have withdrawn, retreating to the river.
Chual says the death toll may rise and accused the government forces of targeting civilians.
We, the people of Nasir, feel that we are not part of South Sudan because of what is being done to us. They sent an army that doesn't want peace. They shelled us with their big weapons, and we said, let them finish us. We resisted and fought to defend ourselves.
James Bassa, the Minister of Information in Upper Nile State, says civilians in Nasir town have fled their homes because of the fighting.
What I've been informed is both sides, there is death both sides, between White Army and SSPDF. The death is both sides, but there is not any number I can give you. There is a flow of the civilian. They evacuate Nasir totally. There is no anybody there. Really, this is very bad for the innocent people of Nasir. The people already evacuate the town because the Nasir has become a place of war all the time. Any time they will be attacked, yeah. And they are suffering now.
The armed forces released a short statement Tuesday on the fighting, saying the office of the SSPDF spokesperson, as of now, is not in a position to provide media briefing on the security situation in Nasir and the surrounding areas. In a press statement on Monday, Ter Manyang Gadwich, executive director of the Center for Peace and Advocacy, warned that the fighting in Nasir County threatens the implementation of the revitalized agreement on the resolution of the conflict in South Sudan.
Both political leaders will bear responsibility if a country to fully scale war due to mismanagement of this crisis. It is crucial to engage in dialogue and maintaining a frank, honest approach among the political elites. Therefore, we call upon the SSPDF leadership to act as a professional army.
Ter urged the government to prioritize the protection of civilians. The embassies of Canada, France, Germany, the Netherlands, Norway, the United Kingdom, and the United States, as well as the European Union delegation, expressed concern over the clashes and the risk of escalating violence in Upper Nile State. In a press statement, they called on leaders from all parties in Juba, including SPLMIG and SPLMIO, to de-escalate the situation responsibly and peacefully. They urged all parties to resolve tensions through dialogue. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Juba.
The Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, SPLMIO, in Western Equatorial State, denies allegations that opposition-appointed ministers have abandoned their duties. It says they are not in Yambio because of safety concerns following a growth of violence and attacks on its members. For VOA News, Matia Samuel Timotio reports from Yambio.
In Western Equatoria, several state ministers and the Nagiro County Commissioner have disappeared after South Sudan's President Salva Kiir dismissed Governor Alfred Futio last month. The officials, including the state ministers of Information and Communication, Public Service, Finance and Planning, have been in hiding since February 10th. They are members of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, led by First Vice President Riek Machar. Elia Dominic Osini is the State Minister of Information and Communication, and he spoke to this program from a hidden location. Osini says he and some other officials relocated to several areas of the country and others left the country after the security situation in Yambio deteriorated.
The town was not under control. It was not under any security. That is why we managed to take cover, and now we are within the country, and we are now still a government of Western Equatorial State. There was a propaganda released that we are now nowhere. I call it propaganda. About our coming back, we are in good communication with my acting governor. We are coming back to the state, of course. We are not relieved from our position, as we have not yet cleared our position out, because I was not relieved. How will I lose my job?
Hussein says they continue to maintain contact with the senior leaders, including First Vice President Machar and the acting governor of Western Equatoria. Daniel Badagbo is the acting governor. He says the officials have refused to return to work, although he has offered them security services.
Futio was the only person who was relieved by the president. The question is, what did these people do they are fearing from? Because if I have already told them to resume their office, whom are they going to work now with? Because I'm the acting now here. They're supposed to come and work. There's no reason why they have to run. They have to return back to the office. There is no any security threat. A member of a unity government can never fear from his own forces. Any government official, like a minister, is entitled to even have their bodyguards. I need all the ministers, all the MPs, and everybody to report to their office.
Badagbo says the state is committed to providing security for the SPLM-IO officials because their absence means work is not done.
If the ministers are not in their offices, the government machinery and apparatus will be affected. Because if I want the ministers to do something or what they have planned to do, if they are not there, there is a bit of a deficit in doing the work.
Samuel Ted Machar is the acting police commissioner of Western Equatorial State, and he says Yambio is safe.
The security situation in Yambio or in Western Equatoria in general is normal, and also the crimes, it has also reduced. It's not like before that people are robbing in the roads and all this. So at this time around, you can walk normal up to Najero, and you can also from Najero up to Munduri East and West.
Last month, some top state officials with the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition under the first Vice President Riek Machar said their members had been assaulted in Yambio after President Kiir fired Governor Futio. Shortly after he was dismissed, Futio's home in Yambio reportedly was attacked by people linked to the South Sudan People's Defense Forces, prompting him to flee. For VOA News, I am Matias Samuel Timatio, reporting from Western Equatorial State Capital, Yambio.
Experts say the spread of malaria is worsening in Ethiopia's most populous region, Oromia, where a conflict has been raging between the government and a rebel group, the Oromo Liberation Army, since 2018. Doctors and aid workers told the French news agency AFP that fatal cases were surging thanks to the perfect storm of climate change and armed conflict. They say the violence has led to the collapse of health facilities, leaving thousands at risk, including subsistence farmers. And scientists warn that warmer, wetter conditions in which malaria-spreading mosquitoes thrive. The World Health Organization notes that there were 7.3 million malaria cases and 1,157 deaths recorded in Ethiopia between January and October. Africa accounts for about 95% of the 250 million malaria cases and more than 600,000 deaths across the globe each year, according to WHO. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A look at after we shall be back after a very short break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
Rwanda said Tuesday it was, quote, shameful of Canada to impose sanctions over its involvement in the conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo. On Monday, Canadian Foreign Minister Melanie Joly condemned the presence of the Rwanda Defense Forces in the DRC and its support for the M23, a charge denied by Kigali. Joly said in a statement that Rwanda's activities, quote, constitute flagrant violations of the DRC's territorial integrity and sovereignty and of the United Nations Charter, end quote. The French news agency AFP reports that Canada said it would suspend export permits for controlled goods and technologies to Rwanda and review its participation in international events hosted by Kigali. Rwanda Foreign Ministry said that Ottawa's position on the conflict in the Eastern DRC is shameful and the sanctions will not solve the conflict. The need to end the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East, the United States imposing tariffs on the other countries, and the downsizing of the U.S. federal government, those are some of the topics that President Donald Trump is expected to highlight when he delivers the first address of this second term in office to Congress tonight. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports.
Mr. Speaker! The President of the United States.
As he did back in 2017, U.S. President Donald Trump is scheduled to address a joint session of Congress on Tuesday. The Russia-Ukraine war is expected to feature prominently in Trump's speech in the context of his administration's ongoing efforts to mediate peace negotiations between the parties in conflict.
I'm looking for peace. We're not looking to go into a 10-year war and play games. We want peace.
The U.S. leader could also update Congress on his stance on the Israel-Hamas war and the future of Gaza. During a joint press conference with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on February 4th, Trump suggested the U.S. transform Gaza into the, quote, Riviera of the Middle East.
The United States owning that piece of land, developing and creating thousands of jobs with something that will be magnificent.
During his speech at the Capitol, analysts also expect that Trump will speak about the rationale behind the U.S. imposing tariffs on other countries. Shannon Bo O'Brien is associate professor of instruction in the government department at the University of Texas at Austin. She spoke via Zoom.
I believe in his view, he believes that if he imposes tariffs, it's going to cause a rise in prices to cause manufacturers to have to come back to the United States to avoid those tariffs.
Trump could also push back on some criticism his administration has received over the speed and scope of its efforts to reduce government spending, cut fraud and waste, and slash the size of the federal workforce. Analyst Shannon Bo O'Brien via Zoom.
I think he's going to talk about it as a cost-saving measure. I believe he's going to talk about how great of a thing it is.
U.S. Senator Lisa Slotkin, a former CIA analyst, has been chosen to give the Democratic rebuttal to President Trump's address. Analyst O'Brien thinks Americans will probably follow Senator Slotkin's remarks and Trump's full address, primarily on web streams or social media platforms on Tuesday night, or read the highlights the following day. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Tonight, President Donald J. Trump will address a joint session of Congress at the U.S. Capitol building, just a few hundred meters from our VOA headquarters here in Washington. This speech will be his first to the Congress since he returned to the White House in January. Over the past few decades, presidential speeches to Congress have tended to focus on domestic issues, not foreign policy. Earlier today, my colleague Peter Klote spoke with Nii Akutye, a former professor of international affairs at George Washington University here in Washington, about his expectations for the speech.
Yes, normally I wouldn't expect a lot of mention of Africa. I don't think that if you go back, and it's not just this president, if you go back to previous, even the one president who is the son of an African man, I mean Obama, I don't recall him even mentioning Africa. Maybe he did, but point is, the U.S. Society and their politics, they don't rate Africa very high. Africa is the lowest of their on their totem pole. So my normal expectation, we'll be lucky if the word even comes up once. I doubt that it will come up, but I stress normal because we are not in normal times. So the second abnormality is that actually since Trump came to power in the 6 weeks, 5.5 weeks, he has bombed the terrorists in Somalia.
But do you see the president making, you know, reference to the fact that perhaps America will take the fight to them, irrespective of where they are, particularly even in Africa, like what he did in terms of Somalia's terrorists?
No, I don't see him doing that at all, because he in particular, you know, on the one hand, he says, projecting strength. But if you consider the last four presidents, all the way back to George Bush, 41, Trump is the one who says, no, I don't want to go to war. Okay, I'll do anything not to go to war. And actually the sentiment, U.S. public sentiment, in my opinion, supports that. I mean, all across the political spectrum, you've got mainstream media, right-wing media, all of them saying forever wars. So remember that Biden pulled out of Afghanistan. But the plan for pulling out of Afghanistan was signed by Trump. But all of them have read the American people saying, if you send troops anywhere, you are in big trouble. Okay, so, and Trump, I'm saying in particular, in part, doesn't want to send troops anywhere. But he's dropping the bombs in Somalia. This is my point. It surprised me because in his first term, the only thing he did with Africa was pull troops out of Libya when there was a fight to support the government of Libya against, some of the insurgents, and U.S. troops were protecting the Tripoli. And he pulled them out, and then just before he left office, he also pulled them out of Somalia. You're asking about my expectations. So no, I'm very surprised if he does that. The only other Africa thing is, I'm also surprised that he imposed sanctions on Rwanda and M23. But those were two individuals.
That was Ni Akwete, a retired professor of international affairs at George Washington University. He was speaking by phone with Peter Clote, host of VOA's Nightline Africa program. Tonight, tune in into our special Daybreak Africa radio program covering the president's speech to Congress. It begins at 01:30 UTC. That's 8:30 p.m. here in Washington. Join hosts James Bache and Carol Van Damme for all the details of the speech, which begins at 0200 UTC or 9 p.m. here in Washington. Guinean authorities announced a reduction in the price of rice, the country's staple food, and other food items ahead of the month of Ramadan. But according to traders and consumers, the move has not changed the prices of basic food items, and they have called on the government to do more. Reporter Karim Kamara has more from Conakry.
Retailers and other traders say they are finding it difficult to cope with the new prices and continue to buy from their suppliers at the old prices. Mamadou Sow, a rice retailer, says the government's announcement has created confusion. He says customers are not coming because they say they have heard on radio that government has fixed the price of a bag of rice between 290,000 Guinean francs to 280,000 Guinean francs, or about $27 to $25. He says they are not buying it at those prices. Instead, they purchase between 290,000 Guinean francs and 288,000 Guinean francs, or between $27 to $26 from wholesalers. He says if retailers buy it at those prices and pay transportation, how they expect to sell it at government prices and still make a profit. The price of red meat, including lamb, is also at all-time high in Guinea compared to the price of chicken. But ahead of this year's month of Ramadan, the price of chicken has also skyrocketed, something traders deplored. Suleiman Barry runs a chicken shop. He says this morning his brother sent him a list of new chicken prices, and he was sad to hear that the price of imported chicken has increased during this holy month of Ramadan. He says the price of imported chicken used to buy at 250,000 Guinean francs, or about $22 per carton, now it's 270,000 Guinean francs, or about $24 per carton. It says when retailers buy it at 270,000 Guinean francs and resell it, they have to add to the price, which has an effect on their customers. Aminata Kamara, a housewife, has come to shop in the main market of Matutu, an area on the outskirts of the capital, Conakry. She says, contrary to government announcement of price reductions, prices continue to skyrocket. She says the prices of oil, rice, and tomatoes have all increased, and she says she is really in a difficult position. She says the authorities must do something to help them. She says, tell Mr. Dumbuya to help us in the name of God to reduce prices of basic food items in the holy month of Ramadan. Guinea is predominantly a Muslim state, but most Muslims are finding it difficult to put food on the table during these early days of Ramadan due to price hikes on food items. The Guinean government recently lifted taxes on imported basic food items such as rice, oil, sugar, and onions ahead of Ramadan. The government says it will send security agents to market areas to implement the new prices on basic food items and ease the burden on consumers. But it remains to be seen if the strategy will remedy the situation. For VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
And that's all for this Tuesday, March 4th, 2025, South Sudan in Focus edition. We now leave you with Sura Yako by Sauti Sol. Yes, I've been listening to Sura Yako by Sauti Sol. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, on this live broadcast from Washington. For more information on our programs, log on to voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Peter Hanley, We wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from here at the Voice of America.